See, it's still morning, is it? Almost, so yes. Good morning, everyone. It's been 3 years since the last colloquium, so I was thinking back to 2007, and there's two things I remember about 2007. One was iPhones. That was the year the iPhones and then the iTouches came out, so I've got my iTouch here. And the other thing was I distinctly remember standing in this room talking about additional fuels, but that's okay, because I do think that what happens is that with the advent of telecommunications, perhaps people were not listening. But I think what I shared with the audience 3 years ago was that I had actually started working in this area. It was my very first job in 1983, which was quickly about 3 years later, evaporated with the advent of an oil glut. So as our colleague from Brazil mentioned, nothing is new under the sun, because when I worked there in 1983, there was already a large body of literature. But what is encouraging to me is the progress in the 3 years, and the fact that we actually had such a wealth of speakers to draw from. Now, I didn't want to just focus on life cycle analysis. I wanted to talk about the U.S. program, but in a sense, a lot of what I was going to say has been said, and I think that is excellent, because that really gives you a sense and shows you how the industry has come together. If you could hand me that piece of paper and such. So as I was sitting there, I was starting to think, well, what could I add that hasn't been said? And one of the things I was looking at, I have been working with the IPCC on a special report on renewable energy, and that has been immensely instructive in that it has put aviation within context. You're not the king of the world, you're within a context. So we were looking at the status of energy, and the last set of statistics that covers everything had, if you look at mechanical work, which is where transportation is under, you've got about 66% coming from fossil fuels and about 13% from renewables. Now, you might say, that's not a lot, but if you think about it, that is not such a different ratio. So we kind of need to keep some of that in mind. Now, when we talk about alternative fuels, again, it's within a context. And in the U.S., it's one of our pillars of what we're working from, and it's already been said, if you want to do a turn the corner, you need different fuels, fuels that can reduce your overall carbon. Now, it's interesting to put this in context, because if I were looking at this turn the corner chart for the whole economy, actually, sustainable fuels and energy efficiency give you about the same benefits. It's used that our industry is very, very, very efficient. So what we ask ourselves is, can alternative fuels provide aviation with a sustainable source of energy? And that is the key here. We're additional, sustainable. I like those two terms so much better, sustainable and additional, than alternative. We have talked about this before, why aviation. We've talked about the assuredness of the market. I asked myself, what is different about when I worked this before, and I see the environmental need, the coming together and the commitment of the industry. The other thing that I just found out this morning, there was a very interesting article in Biofuels Digest, and it was titled, it started out with the Mile High Club, but we will not go there. It was about aviation. And it talked about, what does it mean when the entire supply chain bands together to make the industry work? And what it said was, it really means it. So I think that this industry absolutely means that it wants to use these types of fuels. So what have we achieved recently? We've talked about the specification. I think what's important to note is that was the first time in 20 years for a new specification. And the other key point to note is that it was it not only a specification, but it was the process was set up. We really didn't know how to alter the specification. So even though qualifying a Fischer-Tropsch fuel that we have been using for years and years was maybe not such a major point, the fact that we got the spec was critical. We've had flights, and then we had the formation of CAFE in the United States in 2006, and so much has happened since I first talked at ICAO about CAFE. Nancy did a very good job of CAFE 101, saving a lot of time for me to talk about life cycle analysis. But I do want to show this. Talking about the Federation, Nancy, I admit that when I was a child growing up and watched Star Trek, it wasn't my favorite show, but my friend made me watch it all the time, so I did not, but I fell asleep. So I actually had to Google it, but found out that the Federation had like 150 members, and I think CAFE is catching up, if not exceeded, the Federation, but I really like that analogy. And then we've talked about the comprehensive approach. I am going to focus on what the environmental team is doing, and what's important is that you should focus on your critical competences. Again, going back to the iPhone and how something like that is developed, you don't form large multinational bodies and a lot of government regulation. You get to it and you do the job, and the right people, the right key stakeholders, small groups need to focus on the issues, and then we can coordinate through a body like ICAO. So what are we doing now? I want to make some points about life cycle analysis. I was glad to see some of the work that we sponsor under the Partner Center of Excellence quoted this morning, but I want to add to that. We are working on measuring the well-to-wake life cycle greenhouse gas emissions, but we are working very hard in doing that within the context of the entire biofuels infrastructure. I'm very glad that Louisa is here because she's not from aviation. She's from the entire work of biofuels. It's not about aviation. You need to work this within the broader context. But we are looking all the way from land use, extraction, production, to use on the aircraft. Actually, the piece that we know the best is that aircraft piece. Now, what you see here is some examples of some of the work. What I draw your attention to is that even crude to conventional jet fuel is not a single point. Depending on how you process it, there's an uncertainty band around it. If you look at the chart, what you should be comparing is you should be comparing the other fuels to what the crude to conventional jet fuel is. And you can see that there's a number of potential fuels that give you lower life cycle analysis, but look at the band. We heard a number of 85% quoted this morning. That's the most optimistic end of the band. There's also a pessimistic end of the band. Does it mean that it's not going to work? Well, of course not. What it means is that we are identifying the pressure points, and we are looking forward to what do you need to do, what do you need to concentrate on, what works, what may not work, and then work in a framework. We are doing a lot of different testing, and we've talked about some of the other things that we're doing. Now, I want to talk about life cycle analysis, and for that, we do need something that is accepted worldwide. If I pick a life cycle, if I do my own life cycle analysis, and Louisa does her own life cycle analysis, and Jane does her own cycle analysis, and we all do it differently, how do we know where we really are? So there needs to be a lot of coordination and a standard, something like an ANSI standard. On the other hand, that takes a while to achieve, and we can't afford to wait that long. So what we are doing is we are coming up with early approximations and coming up with guidance to the industry so that we can move forward. So we have heard 3 to 5 years that we want to start using these fuels. Well, we can't wait 10 years for the guidance to come out. So we do have a preliminary framework that we have, and this is important. In the U.S., we have worked it within the overall frameworks. So it's important not to set an additional framework. You need to work within what exists. And so this allows us to do a lot of preliminary assessment, inform policy, et cetera, and do screening. The next level, we see that as a standard where we examine everything. There's a lower degree of completeness than a comprehensive life cycle analysis, but it moves you forward. What we're working with right now is that within a year to have for aviation, a first-order approximation, so with all of the players weighing in that you can use. And then ultimately, we need a comprehensive analysis conducted to meet regulation. But if you think about regulatory structures, you continue to refine those. So we need something in between. Now, what we've talked a lot about life cycle analysis and greenhouse gases. I think it is, and though the focus has been on climate, remember, and we've touched upon this before, environmental impacts are not isolated, and they're interdependent. We've not heard much about noise, but that which you do for noise impacts climate and air quality, noise, climate, all of those impacts are interdependent. So a life cycle analysis needs to also include air quality benefits. And I wanted to touch on those because when I spoke 3 years ago, I said, well, I think that these fuels, if I look at the aromatic content, if I look at the sulfur content, if I look at the tests done on military aircraft, I think that in commercial engines, we are going to get benefits. But I didn't really know that because, again, the engines were very different. But what we have seen in tests over and over and over again in the last few years is that whether we are doing a modern gas turbine engine, an auxiliary power unit, or a very high-performance military engine, if you look at aerosols, if you look at particulate matters, as we go from a conventional fuel to, which is the red line on the left, to fuels with plants, we reduce those particulates dramatically. And then what's exciting as well on the right-hand side is if we look at 100% additional fuel, but then a blend, we almost get the same level of benefits. And that is very important because as we are looking into qualification and certification, everything that we've done has been a blend. There are certain things, yes, we may not want aromatics in there, but they serve a purpose and you can't just do without it. But the neat thing about this is the benefits. And then here, it's new data just very recently taken, and I wanted to show this as well because this was a collaboration between our U.S. researchers and our U.K. researchers who were seeing tremendous reductions of particulate matter on auxiliary power units. And you need to take that into account when you're looking at a life cycle analysis. Those are benefits. Now, how does that apply to climate? Well, if I have a solution that allows me to reduce my health impacts and then I've got more design variability that allows me to then focus on greenhouse gas emissions. We've talked about, and you've heard about the ASTM standard that has come out, and that's important, again, because it's how we make sure that we can use fuel from one place to another. Now, we've seen this timing. What I wanted to mention here, it's, again, we are working towards the specification of a 50% hydrotreated renewable jet. I have done a first look at that. The ballot is out, but like with your congressional votes in the U.S., you always know how people are going to vote ahead of time. So we know that there are some things that we need to do and some additional ground and flight tests, and we're trying to plan for those. So what the reason that I wanted to mention that is that those of you that are planning ground tests, flight tests, et cetera, please coordinate those with the qualification and certification authorities so that you target the issues that need to be resolved. We've talked about, let's see, the processing, and I don't want to delve on that, but again, where we're at today, look at the variety of feedstocks. So when you look at life cycle analysis, you need to move beyond that. So what is coming next? I do want to focus on this chart from a life cycle analysis for all of aviation. We feel that, yes, in all of the screening and such, and from the life cycle analysis, that we can have sustainable fuels, but we do have to be very careful of avoiding competition. And we have seen it just many, many different types of fuels. What you see in this chart is we actually took a look at could we achieve that carbon neutral growth into the future for all of aviation. And what we laid out was, well, how much land would it take from different feedstocks? Now, I'm not advocating to take all of Asia or all of Africa, et cetera. But the good news to me about this is that it's not greater than the available land mass. And then again, going to my iPhone iTouch, I kind of think back when we went to the moon, the computing power that allowed us to do that was less than it's in this little device. Therefore, when we try to project this industry, the one thing that I am sure of is that 3 years ago, if I find myself here again, that most of the predictions we would have made are wrong. However, I do believe that the technology exists where we can create the fuels that are compatible with today's aircraft. There's no question about that. But we have to work on this environmental sustainability. It is a global process. I think that within CAFE, the elements of CAFE that focus on commercial are working very hard to encourage global projects. And this is my last chart, and again, it comes down to the members of the Federation. You can see pictures of Nancy and some of the other folks there of the flight test. That's myself and colleagues from Boeing, airlines, NASA testifying last year before Congress where they wanted to learn about what we were doing on aviation fuels. And the picture to the right, it's CAFE was recognized by Air Transport World. I think important to remember is how CAFE came together. I see it more on the pattern that brought about things like Microsoft, Facebook, and what have you, where you actually had people in their dorm rooms that came together and created something new, something that we didn't create any memorandum of understanding. We didn't have any declaration or anything else. It was actually more of a someone from Air Transport Association, someone from the manufacturers, and myself. We looked at each other and said, this needs to be done. Let's band together. Let's move forward. Get it done. Whatever structures need to come along, they'll come along, and oh, let's bring the airports along. And we came together. And I mention this because I think that as we move forward in this area, let's think about it more like we think of the Googles and the Facebooks and that type of layout and not work to old patterns, but try to overcome challenges and barriers. Now, I kind of view the ICAO roadmap as the Facebook type. You're the enabler of that information exchange. But it's important that the right critical pieces work with the other elements. So with that, thank you for the opportunity to speak and to go review the progress in the last 3 years, and look forward to hearing from Luisa.